Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Guys, this is Succession. This is HBO. If you don't want to hear me talking about Logan Roy, talking about then don't listen to this. There are bad language words in this show. Hello, and welcome back to the fucking pirates episode of Slate Money Succession. Yes, we can say that word on this show. I am Felix Salmon of Axios. I'm here with my colleague Emily Peck.
Hello, hello.
I'm here with Elizabeth Spires.
Hello.
And we have the best person to talk about Succession, Claire Malone. Welcome.
Hi, good to be here.
Claire, introduce yourself. Who are you?
I'm a staff writer at The New Yorker covering media and politics.
Oh, yes.
And what you do is you just media gossip, which is basically all we do on this show. So this was intense, man. This was a very complex piece of filmmaking. My wife, I have to say, loved it. She couldn't stop talking about how wonderful she thought the acting was. Emily, can you give me like the TLDR? Just give me the 30-minute catch up of like try and explain what happened in this episode, because it was complicated.
Yeah, well, I'll give you the 30-second catch up. That's probably more like a minute. So, the first episode of the season, I came out here on this podcast and I was like, "This is great! All the kids are together. They're united. They're the Rebel Alliance," as they're told by Connor. In this episode, this is the episode where that all falls apart and falls to shit and. Basically, Logan worms his way back and breaks up the team. That would be my TLDR.
The sheep that he separates from the flock is Roman.
Roman, yes. And I would also say he separates Roman. By the end, Roman is like going to be the new leader of ATN, the new Sid. But the mistake he also makes is giving Tom that divorce advice, which sets Shiv off on this like... on the notion that she has to bust up the Gojo deal. If he hadn't done that, if he hadn't screwed with her divorce, the Gojo deal by the conceit of the show, the Gojo deal would have went through and it would have been fine. But no, she had to sort of like get back at her father for that, you know?
We open this episode with Shiv going outside in some upstate New York location to take a call, being told that all of the divorce lawyers in New York have been conflicted out. And we get this incredible facial expression from her where she's just like absolutely furious. And we're like, okay, someone is going to wind up cut.
And then she gets on the horn with Sandy, female Sandy.
So I love how Sandy and Stewie just became Sandy and Stewie, but a different Sandy.
That's right. I like them as comic relief a little bit in this episode. Yeah, just like... vultures, basically,
but
trying
even,
to get a little
even,
bit extra money.
I was thinking in the first episode that Carl and Jerry and why am I forgetting the name of
Frank?
And Frank have also become like, you know, in the Shakespearean tragedy, they're sort of like the clowns. Like they're kind of always like grouped together now.
Yes.
And they're like, I mean, they're doing real things, but they're also, they become more side characters who are being goofy.
Yes. Yeah, and we're getting interesting pairings. It's like Carl and Frank always seen next to each other. Now we get Jerry and Hugo are suddenly like hanging out, giggling at Carrie's audition tape.
Oh, Carrie's audition tape. So bad. Wow. Poor Carrie. Does she not know it's bad? That's my question. Everyone wants to break the news to her that it's bad, but...
I don't think
when
she
you
does.
Do something,
she's
really?
She's very. She's, she, well, she walks around very confident after she does it, even though everybody's whispering about her behind her back.
Yeah.
And she seems confused when Greg tries to sit down with her and explain diplomatically that she needs work.
Ah, the Greg diplomacy.
The TV arms. My arms? The TV arms.
So we should. Yeah, talk about like the sort of business conceit of this show.
Yes. let's get serious.
Which is that Sandy and Stewie want more money for Waystar Royko from Gojo. And they think that Gojo is underpaying and that if they just showed a little bit more cojones or backbone, whatever you want to call it, then they could extract more money out of Gojo, which they then have to persuade the kids to get on board because otherwise they don't have remotely enough votes at board level. That pans out as a motivation for Sandy and Stewie, since they're like passive shareholders and they just want to maximize their ROI. It seems pretty obvious that, you know, the kids are getting $1 billion each. If they get $1.1 billion each, you know, it's like they're not going to, it's not such a big deal for them. So if they are going to vote against the deal, it's not what they keep on saying, which is, this is just money. It's just a sensible financial decision. Like, clearly it's not. Clearly, they need their own sort of personal, familial, Shakespearean.
Like, the whole theme of the show reasons. Is like, what is business and what is an emotional decision? And it's it all gets mixed up.
And the scene which I think really sort of stuck with me the most was when Kendall gets that phone call from, what's his face at Gojo?
The Swede. All they all just kept on saying, you want to squeeze
Madsen, that's his name. Kendall gets a call from Madsen, and Madsen is very clear. He's like, you know, I am not going to pay anymore. If you want to try and negotiate this up, I will go away. And he doesn't do that in a way that seems like he's bluffing. It seems like he's telling the truth. And immediately, Kendall's like, okay, now I'm going to start negotiating upwards, which basically says to me that Kendall wants this deal to fall apart. He does not want this deal to happen.
Consciously or subconsciously?
Well, consciously, because where we left season three was with the three kids desperately trying to make the deal not happen and then being overruled by their dad. Now Kendall has realized that this is a way for him to get what he wanted at the end of season three, which was for the deal to not happen.
Interesting. And then he can come back, find a way back into the...
Or whatever. Like, the point is that, like, when we... Somewhere between the end of season three and the beginning of season four, the kids kind of came to peace with this idea that the company was going to be sold, they were all going to become billionaires, and they should just have wind up having to do something else. But clearly they, at least... Well, not clearly, but at least in my reading... Kendall hasn't come to peace with that, and he would still rather not do the deal.
So you think he's like an internal saboteur?
Yeah.
Yeah, there was also some tension with Madsen in the last season where they weren't getting along, and I think there was some ego issue there too. You know, he didn't like being bullied by Madsen, and the tone that Madsen was using with him in that call was very much, you know, putting Kendall in his place.
That's how I read it, as Kendall just being like, well, no, I just want to fuck this guy over, kind of like, I didn't think of Kendall having any strategic long game in trying to bust up the deal. It was more like, I'm just trying to mess with Madsen and prove to him that I can or something. You can't bully me.
But you are absolutely right that Shiv's motivations are clear. She's just really annoyed about the divorce tactics on part of Tom.
Well, she brings it up like two or three other times in the show. She uses it to tell Roman, to get Roman on her side. She's like, look what Dad did to me. And I think she, again, in the big scene at the end of the show, she brings it up again. Like,
yeah, she
and
also,
she clearly gets really upset, speaking of the acting, like her nostrils start flaring and she looks, doesn't she get so like emotional?
Yeah, she also draws a parallel between the way her dad treated their mom, where in this analogy, Shiv is being treated the same way as one of the
divorce attorneys.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. And talking about how Logan treats his ex-wives.
I know what you're going to say.
Say it.
He institutionalized Connor's mom. He put her away. That's locked her up.
Yeah, that's what they said.
That's what they said?
Yeah.
Where is this woman?
That's the first time. The whole, like, Connor of it all towards the end, I was like,
yeah,
we
have never heard about Connor's mom, but like, is Connor's mom going to turn up at the wedding?
I also was wondering, I was like, what's the sort of, because they're always kind of making allusions to real world things. And I was like, what is this? Because like, Rupert's first wife wasn't like all I know is that she was like a stewardess, an airline stewardess when they first met. But I don't really know what happened to her. What I did think of was like Shelley Miskovich, like the Scientology lady. I was like, oh, what's going on? Because it felt very Victorian, like you institutionalized her.
Yes.
But the Connor of it all was so, I think this episode and the first episode of the season, like Roman has become a little bit of the voice of business reason. Like if Shiv and Kendall are acting emotionally, Roman, who's had a lot of interactions with Madsen, right? He feels like he kind of has his temperature, mm-hmm. is sort of saying like, no, I know this. Like
Roman has that mm-hmm. line where he says to Sandy and Stewie, so we vote yes tomorrow and we all make billions of dollars, or we vote for your cool shit and dad disinherits us entirely. He's like, he's kind of understood the stakes here in a way that the other ones
but
haven't.
Totally. Yeah. And what's so I think the shift, if you look at the arc of the series, the shift of Shiv and Roman, to me, they've kind of completely switched places in my brain to where Shiv started off as sort of like the sympathetic figure, and Roman was just like absolutely out there, like disgusting.
Yeah, he was the fuck up, and she was the one who was apparently good at business.
And now they've totally switched, where I feel sort of sympathy both from a practical level and an emotional level for Roman, because he's sort of trying to be sensible about the business stuff, empathetic to Connor in his time of need. And Shiv, I mean, last episode, Shiv basically like said she was getting divorced to kind of seal a business deal. Like, mm-hmm. I felt like she was wavering before that Nan Pierce conversation. And then she was like, no, I'm getting divorced, you know? And I feel like she's sort of totally sold her soul to be part of the family, that I've just seen like a role reversal. Like, I find Shiv very off-putting now.
I think that's right. We have some very interesting, genuine, like, character arcs going on.
Yeah,
here.
Interesting. I think there's been foreshadowing, though, about Roman coming into this more serious role since season one, though. He has this glib, superficial, you know, surface personality thing, but then there are moments where he's the voice of reason, even from the beginning. But they're just escalating now, and I think this is where he finally gets peeled off from the other siblings.
Yeah.
Yeah. Totally. Shiv's been betrayed, like, in the first or second season when her father says she's going to run the company and then takes it back. And then in the last season, when Tom, you know, sells her out to her father. So she's been, like, betrayed twice. So I feel like she's lost her ability to love and trust.
Yeah.
And I don't think Roman has. And we know Connor pretends he doesn't need love anymore, but
What do we make of that amazing monologue from Connor, which is like, my superpower is that I don't need love?
It's telling on himself. He 100% needs love. Like, he begged Willa to marry him, and he's so relieved when he gets home and she's in the bed.
He does, but he's also correct whenever he calls the other siblings. He says, you're all love sponges.
Yeah.
You're all needy love sponges. And you, because he's not wrong, you know, and in some way, they're each of them, you know, a lot of the decisions that they're making really built around whether they want to screw over Logan or get him to love them.
Yes. Yes. And he says, and was that the first time on the show Logan has ever said, I love you to the kids? Because he said, I don't recall him saying it before.
That's a good question. I feel like he's maybe said it before. But what was so interesting to me about the whole setting of him saying, I love you, is that there was an obvious business purpose for sitting there and saying it. So, like, maybe he meant it, but also, like,
well,
he'd been forced into a corner to say it.
Yeah, we have him, you know, finding out about the kids talking to Sandy and Stewie, and he's sitting in some conference room at ATN, and Carrie's like, do you want me to phone them up and shout at them? And he's like, and you can see the wheels turning, and he's like, no, this one I need to be a bit more subtle and delicate about.
This one I need to go to karaoke place.
So that was subtle and delicate, Logan, that we saw there, you know, trying to meet them on their ground in that uncomfortable karaoke spot where, you know, Connor had recently been trying to sing a Leonard Cohen song.
Oh, my
Incredible.
Gosh, the Leonard Cohen was
oh
so
my God.
Good.
It's a good song. He was doing okay.
Connor has a better singing voice than Kendall.
Although Kendall's wasn't terrible. He could, like.
But it's also such a nice touch to have, you know, Connor say something like, I want to go to karaoke. I've seen it in movies.
Yes.
And it's his life is so far removed from any normal person's that just going
well, not normal people who like sweat with their hands and bleed from that. What was that?
That was my quote. So that, you know, I want a real bar with chicks and guys who work with their hands and sweat from their hands and have blood in their hair.
It's so good.
So good. Drink Belgian Weiss beer, but not Hogan.
That was a great line.
He's wonderful.
I did like that the episode ended with Connor getting another dimension. Like and Alan Ruck is such a good actor because he's craven in a way too, as like all the other siblings are. But he is sweet, right? We have all the details of him like taking the kids on a fishing trip when Logan wouldn't, like being actually a good older brother and like putting up with a lot of abuse from them.
My theory is that he had a few years of normalcy with parents.
Yeah.
There must have been a few years where they weren't super billionaire rich family
and
yet.
Before his mother was institutionalized.
His mother was sent away. Oh my God. And also I want to note the turnaround of Willa, who in season one, everyone was like, she's basically a prostitute and we won't talk to her, to now where Kendall is saying, Connor, you're not doing better than Willa.
Yeah.
Like, they're like, no, this is as good as it gets for you.
I mean, the three kids, who we always just talk of as the three kids because we always forget Connor. The three kids are still incredibly rude to Connor.
Yes.
Right? And Roman is talking about Willa finding some, like, you know, young dick. And I think at one point he calls him POTUS Scrotus.
Yes, he does.
But Connor, you're absolutely right about this, Claire, is now at least elevated to the level of, like, he gets some good lines from the writer's room.
Mm.
You know, where he's like, I'm a plant that grows on rocks and feasts on insects that grow inside me. It's like...
And all the kids are like, whoa.
It's definitely more than, like, what we had last episode where he's like, you know, I'm afraid if I go below 1%, I'll be a laughingstock.
Right, yeah.
That was good, too. I like that, too.
But also, wait, also Connor snitched. I mean, Connor was Connor's the reason why Logan ends up
in the karaoke room.
So yeah. I also was like, oh, Connor's like, everyone's kind of showing their motivations here, right? Like the characters who were behind the scenes, like Carrie. Oh, now we know what Carrie wants. Carrie wants to be on TV. We know Connor needs more money for the campaign. So he like wants the deal to go through. I kind of liked that there was a little bit of like Connor like lightly getting into play.
Let's have a quick ad break and then talk about Carrie and whether it makes any sense that she wants to be on TV. This episode of Slate Money is brought to you by Wondery, which is a podcast company, and it makes a podcast called The Best One Yet, and it is a daily podcast hosted by Nick and Jack, who serve up three of the most interesting business news stories every day and why you need to know them in just 20 minutes. Do you want to hear about the $100 wedding dress that saved Abercrombie, or which real tech acquisitions like Game of Thrones, or the one financial equation that can finally solve climate change? That's the kind of stuff you find on The Best One Yet. So be in the know this year by starting your morning with The Best One Yet every weekday. Follow The Best One Yet on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free right now on Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts, with shows like The Best One Yet, How I Built This, Business Wars, and many more. Wondery means business.
Reboot your credit card with Apple Card, the only credit card designed for iPhone. It gives you up to 3% daily cash back on every purchase. Plus, Apple Card has no fees, not even hidden ones. Apply for Apple Card now in the Wallet app on iPhone. Apple Card issued by Goldman Sachs Bank USA, Salt Lake City branch. Subject to credit approval. Variable APRs for Apple Card range from 19.24% to 29.49% based on creditworthiness. Rates as of February 1st, 2024. Terms and more at applecard.com.
A collision between a Chinese jet and an American spy plane.
He came and rammed into our left wing.
With relations increasingly strained, what are the chances of things spinning out of control?
The Western world was asleep.
I'm Gordon Carrera. I'll be exploring the friction in this most important of relationships and asking, has the West taken its eye off the ball?
You cannot ignore China.
From BBC Radio 4, this is Shadow War, China and the West. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
So, as the media reporter, Claire, can you does this idea that Kerry wants to be on TV strike you as remotely plausible? Like, she has this unbelievably powerful de facto number two position at the top of ATN. She's in all the meetings. She gets to, you know, shout at anyone she wants. And she's like, no, I want to, like, demote myself 18 levels to become an anchor.
It is very strange. Also, she's, I mean, how old do we think Kerry is? She's not like a young,
like,
young woman.
Late 20s, I would say.
I think she's in her 30s.
I think early 30s.
Yeah. Because that's, so I was also like, you know, she's not like a young bumpkin. Like, she's, and also, like, to become a Fox News personality, like, TV news is so, you got to go up through the farm leagues. You got to do local news. You have to, like, present yourself. Also, weirdly, I noticed because of Kerry's audition tape, I was like, there's not a lot of blondes. They're all, I mean, Shiv is obviously like the strawberry blonde exception. But a lot of the women, like, you know, it's a lot of, you know, brunettes. Like, there's not a lot of, I guess, wait.
On ATN?
Yeah.
Like, that's weird. That's very
un-Fox. Have we seen a lot of, maybe I'm like not recalling this well. But I was also struck by, like, Kerry has like blunt across bangs and like brown hair. And there was just something very C-suite about her look and not like, be on TV, you know, she's kind of the look even was off to me. Like, she looked strange in a pink dress.
She's always looked strange, right? That haircut is deliberately strange on some level.
Yeah, it's very harsh and severe.
And not TV anchor. It's not like some like classic TV blow dry.
I mean, for a start, I think if you're a TV anchor, and I don't cover media, but I think you have to be able to read clearly off a cue card. And she didn't. It was so funny.
I don't think it's plausible. I think probably Logan knows it's not plausible.
He knows. Yeah, that was. His conversation with Tom, where he doesn't say that, you know, you
and
need to tell Kerry.
Kind of
they just
an
like
eyebrow.
Look at each other. That was incredible. I was like, would I get this message? I don't know. Like, I need to be told things.
And when the kids say to her, "You've had your betrayal cherry popped," you know, and she that was a great bit of like sort of facial acting from her. But I am kind of curious about the writers' room decision to do. Like, why not elevate her to more of like the advisor track instead of but do
because we already have, you know, the Frank and Jerry and like adding another person at that level doesn't
also
help.
Wait, but if they're rejiggering ATN to be more like fucking pirates, like, and Kerry obviously didn't react well to to Greg's feedback.
What's she going to do to him if the focus group doesn't exist?
Peel him like a string cheese?
Take him apart like a human string cheese, which you did kind of think, well, he is a human string cheese.
That's a good line.
But maybe she could still find a way to maneuver herself onto the new ATN. Like, maybe this storyline really isn't going
away. Yeah, I thought maybe part of the plot point that she wanted to be on TV and then would be sort of humiliated by her own performance was a way of knocking her down a peg, because she sort of, without really establishing it very much, became an advisor to Logan and, you know, sort of tries to punch above her weight a lot in a way that's a little bit grating. So when Greg confronts her, and it feels awkward to hear him confront her, you know, she says she dismisses him entirely, partly because he's Greg, but also because she thinks that she has a better handle on what Logan wants than anybody else.
Well, I think she, at least when we saw her in episode one, like really controlling the birthday party, had definitely stepped into the role that Marsha had in season one.
Yeah.
Right? Yes.
And no one has had that job. No one's had that kind of spouse slash business partner position. Yeah. And Kerry's, and this is why I'm like, that is a great job to have if you're Kerry. It does not make sense that you want to be talent.
No. Yeah. You have so much less power. Like, now you're putting yourself at the mercy of the underlings that you boss around.
And it was Kerry, by the way, who had that amazing line last episode about, oh, Marsha's gone shopping in Milan forever.
Forever. All the women just disappearing.
I know. Ooh. It's really true.
I was very sad that Marsha didn't come back because I loved Marsha so much. And yes. I really, after season one, I was like, please bring back Marsha. But I am happy that Sid is back because Sid is amazing.
Well,
we haven't really seen
long.
Much of her yet.
Well, we don't know how long she's back. We have to dig in. We have to dig in now to the visit to ATN.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, Logan's like Henry V moment.
Yes, he gets up on the boxes, which I remember when Rupert Murdoch took over the journal. I was there, and he also stood on the boxes.
It was a classic Rupert
thing.
Yeah, 100%
total Murdoch thing.
Yeah.
And he gets up, and I was like, yeah, Logan, yeah. Like, I was into it. If I had been in the newsroom, I would have been like, yeah, I'm a pirate. So spicy. Like, so true. We didn't get that news. I'm going to make them turn around in their cars or whatever he said.
I love that the boxes also made Logan exactly Tom's height. Tom stand next to him.
It's lucky Greg wasn't there. He would have towered over both of them.
I loved it because it was like just as media people, you know, you get the business guy stands up and he's like, we're up. What did you say? We're up 5% for the quarter or something like that.
3% week on week in the
like,
demo.
Who cares? Yeah.
Exactly. 15.
It was perfect.
It was so good.
And Logan understood like that no one is motivated by this or cares.
And the real life parallel of that is after Fox sells to Disney, Rupert ends up, and Roger Ailes leaves Fox in a cloud of that we all remember. I think Rupert then, when they spin the two companies away from each other, Fox and News Corp, I think Rupert ended up spending a lot of time at Fox News after Ailes left. Mm-hmm. So when he says, like, I'm going to be here, like, I think that's supposed to be, like, Rupert post-Ailes.
You're absolutely right. Like, the replacement for Roger Ailes was Rupert Murdoch, which everyone was incredibly happy about.
Yeah, but it didn't seem to make much of a difference in the run-up to 2020 or anything. You know what I mean?
Well, I mean, you know, on some level, Rupert can do things that no one else can do, right? When Logan gets up on his pieces of paper and says, and says, like, you know, I want us to be reporting the stuff that no one else is willing to report, and basically gives not just the green light, but an order to go, you know, and push those like journalistic ethical envelopes and to, you know, blow them up to smithereens. We're fucking pirates. Like, that is, you know, he does it in a really compellingly charismatic way. And he does it in a way that, like, if Sid said that, it wouldn't work. You need to be Logan in order to do that.
Right. Give people permission to say the spicy stuff.
The fucking pirates line, I just like cackled. That was the one. It's not even like, it's not like the cleverest line, but just the delivery. I was like, this is such a funny moment. And also, to bring the media reporting back in, my mind right now is so in the Dominion trial, Fox trial that's going to start in 2 weeks.
Right.
And so much of this to me was, you know, after the insurrection happened in January 2021, and some, you know, Fox was some, you know, some reporters were sort of saying, like, this is what really happened. Here's the truth. And now we know through all the discovery in this lawsuit that the executives were freaking out about ratings and saying we need to offer them comfort food. To me, this is kind of like what Fox actually did after January 6th, which is like just like lean more into the hardcore, like Tucker became more and more Tucker, more and more right wing. Like when Logan says we're going to be fucking pirates and it's going to be spicy, I think that's sort of meant to be like the new era of Fox News. Also, who's the candidate now for the GOP?
The young Nazi racist guy?
Yeah. I can't remember his name. It sounded like, it's like, not Mengele, but it's
yeah, it was like that.
Sounded like it. Yeah. Mencken or something?
Mencken. Yeah.
But Mencken is like, you know, the sort of like neo-Nazi guy. Mm-hmm. And they were going to, I think they're sort of going to try to remake ATN in that model.
And he's going
to
bring Roman in.
And he's going to bring Roman in.
So he does have discovered Mencken in a way. Right.
And he does have, yeah, so Roman has fascist tendencies, you know, Auckland. And no, I mean, seriously.
Yeah, that's definitely the, yeah. So
Rupert is to Roman. So Rupert is to Luckland as Logan is to Roman.
Because Luckland is supposedly more
much more right-wing.
Kendall. Yeah. Kendall is to Roman.
No. Like it's the Rupert Luckland relationship, right?
Oh,
where
I see.
Rupert
okay.
Rupert is slightly more realist, like he supports Tony Blair if that's going to do him well in the UK. Whereas Luckland is like the actual right wing true believer.
Yes.
And what you have at the end is Logan really understanding the news business and saying to Roman, you are not Pierce. You know, you can buy Pierce, yeah, but this is not you. This just does not fit with who you are. And you, what's the actual word he uses? He's like, you're not Pierce. Smart people know what they are.
Yeah.
And he's like, if you come here and you take over the newsroom and like, I can see that pirate in you, because there is an element of pirate to Roman, right?
Totally.
Clearly, Roman is a better fit at ATN than he would be at Pierce. And what is also obvious is that Logan understands TV news. He understands TV journalists. He understands how to get them up and motivate them. Meanwhile, you know, we have that scene at the beginning of the episode where Kendall's watching PGN and saying, a show about politics called Inside Baseball? How fucking confusing is that? And like, none of them have a clue. And he's like, let's do like Sub-Saharan East and Sub-Saharan West. And like, they're all morons. And like, you know, all they can come up with is Substack meets Masterclass meets The Economist meets The New Yorker, right? They can't come up with anything smart. They have no idea how to commit news, mm-hmm, especially not on a sort of for-profit basis. And Logan is in his blood. He knows how to do it.
And it's the Fox News. There's, from his quote, he said, so spicy, so true. Something everyone knows, but no one says because they're too fucking lily-livered. That's like, say the racist thing. That's what that means
but
to
it's,
me.
But it's also the classic Nick Denton thing, right? He's like, I want Gorka to be the stuff that everyone says in the bar after work.
Yes. And look where that got him, too. Well.
For 14 years, it went pretty well.
Pretty well. Legend.
It worked until it didn't. Yeah.
But that was the message when Logan said it. That's all I was thinking was just like, oh, the permission to be racist, basically.
Right, which is actually what the New York Post is doing right now. You know, if like the New York Post has gone full like anti-trans and like really sort of like weird right now.
There is like, yeah, I mean, I was watching that again. I was thinking like, what is the conservative media turned into during the Biden years? And it's like everything is now hooked to that's woke. So like when Silicon Valley Bank fell apart, they were like, it's the diversity, equity and inclusion people's fault. Like Silicon Valley Bank was like, you know, a victim of wokeism, not like the actual technical explanation. So
with its executive team, who is all white men. But yeah,
but I feel like to me, that's what I was like, oh, yeah, this is kind of what Fox does, or like what these other conservative satellite channels and networks do. It's like everything is about like is sort of the knee-jerk contrarian argument, and that's what ATN's thing is going to be. It's like the mainstream thing is that here's the thing that is like a little bit funny, right? Like Trump is actually a little bit funny when he's, you know, on one. That's I think what they're kind of aiming for.
The line at the beginning that foreshadows this weirdly is Roman when he's talking to his two siblings about what they're going to do with PGN, and he says, prime time, we go full Clockwork Orange. Which, like, you don't go full Clockwork Orange on PGN, but you totally can on ATN. Like, that would work, right? And that's actually what Fox does, right? In prime time, they go full Clockwork. That's what's his face with the bow tie?
Tucker. Yeah.
What's his face with the bow tie?
Yeah, Tucker's.
He's gone full Clockwork Orange.
Yeah. And, like, you know, texting with Lachlan, you know?
We should have another break, but when we come back, I want to talk about this Gojo deal and whether it's going to happen and basically what is coming up for the rest of this season.
Well, I want to ask about the like the deal, like our prediction for the deals and everything. Like what happens if Gojo drops out, if that deal falls apart?
Yeah.
And Kendall's maybe, to go with your theory, Felix, Kendall's maybe like working to sabotage it from within. What happens with the Pierce sale? Like what? Like
well, there's no Pierce sale.
So clearly. So everything is just kind of like we're back to the original season one.
Like, season one, episode one. We're back.
Right. Like, we're kind of clearing the slate a little bit. Is that what this moment is? Is that what this moment's supposed to be?
No. It's so kind one, of like, one of my sort of overarching theses about Succession is that nothing ever actually happens. Like,
yeah.
My season two when we start season two, the big cliffhanger is like, there's this proxy battle and who's going to win the proxy battle. When we end season two, the big cliffhanger is, there's this proxy battle and who's going to win the proxy battle. Like the actual corporate stuff that happens in Succession is almost nothing. There's a lot of talk about, we're going to buy Pierce, we're going to sell to Gojo, we're going to have, you know, we're going to lose the proxy battle to Stewie, but like, nothing ever actually happens.
But Logan's going to die. I mean, I haven't seen any more of the episodes, but this is my prediction.
He's not going to step down voluntarily.
Yeah, he's like, you know, you've got him musing about mortality on episode one, and if the only way anything is going to change is if, to me, it's like, if this guy goes away.
Yeah,
like,
which is,
away,
but
right?
I think nothing's going to change. I think we're going to end without any fundamental change to the corporate structure of anything. although I have to share,
I fully disagree.
I have to share the. All right, what you think we're going to actually have an event is going to happen?
Well, I believe I've heard the show's creator. Tell me his name.
Jesse Armstrong.
Jesse Armstrong, I believe, has said we can't call the show Succession and not have it pay off. Someone has said that, so I think it's going to pay off somehow. I feel like they put a lot of work into setting up this ATN spinoff, especially in this episode. So it would be weird to me if that doesn't happen. And it seems like I haven't whipped the votes, so I don't know how many votes are needed. But it does seem like Roman's not going to vote. You know, he's going to vote with his father. So
well, there was that last board meeting, you know, with the no confidence vote where Roman
puts his hand back down.
Exactly.
Yeah. So I kind of feel like maybe the Gojo sale does happen. We don't have to bet money.
Well, in the credits. In the credits it used to be there was like an ATN anchor like talking on TV.
Yeah.
Now in the credits there's a little phone with like an app, like a streaming app. So I'm like, oh, well, maybe the season is all about like the streaming app. Again, that's the credits.
Who knows?
I should jump in here and talk about my favorite theory about what happens in this season, which I got from a certain 8th Avenue Kitchen Appliance on Twitter, which is that none of the three kids are Roman's biological children.
Logan's biological children?
Right.
Wait.
What?
If they find out that, like...
That's like Days of Our Lives meets Succession.
They're actually his twins.
So who's, like... Whose are they? They're just like people, like they're random.
That gives Logan the ability to just like disinherit a lot of them, basically.
I think he dies.
That's wild.
I think he dies. And like, so wild. I listened to the last episode, and when Jim Stewart mentioned, or maybe you guys mentioned at the end, the theory of what could potentially happen when Rupert dies. And okay, if this season is building towards, yes, the deal, but also like an election. Like, what if things get too crazy at ATN and the siblings decide, like, we can't let, I guess, Roman run it in this crazy way. We're going to try to take it over and turn it more Pierce. I don't know. Like, something about the, like, does anything get too crazy on ATN and, like, will there be a January 6th type incident?
Maybe Naomi Pierce takes over ATN.
Naomi Pierce. man. Like, Kendall's maybe. Personal life. Like, what happens? There's so many loose ends that I'm kind of like, how are they going to tie all this up for me in...
Yeah, did they ever actually break up? It just sort of petered out or something?
I can't remember.
After that birthday party fiasco?
I can't remember. Yeah, how did it end? He, like, yells...
I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't remember.
Kendall and Naomi?
Yeah, how did they
end? Yeah, they just, you know...
Fizzled.
Roman... Is he actually divorced now? I mean, Kendall. Is he divorced now? Or is he like in the process of getting divorced?
Oh yeah, he's.
I think he's divorced.
He is divorced. Okay. Yeah.
Kendall might die. Sorry, I shouldn't. I should stick to the episode. But now I'm just thinking. Like, I feel like someone has to. Like, this show has toyed so much with like Kendall's life.
Yeah.
That I kind of feel like something happens with either Kendall or Logan.
But like
in a Deus Ex Machina kind of way.
But the immediate question is like, what happens tomorrow? Because we have Logan saying that he wants to jet off to meet Madsen with Roman.
Yeah.
And also, you know, on Connor's wedding day, like, Connor, come on, are you really going to schedule your wedding day for the day the deal's supposed to close?
Do we think anything's going to happen with Connor's presidential bid?
Like,
especially given if ATN goes in this direction where, you know, it does seem to be building toward an electoral scenario.
There is literally no way. Like, remember how Connor keeps on trying to persuade Logan to, like, you know, support him on ADN, and Logan's just like, you are a fucking doofus. No. There's no way.
No.
You are not serious people.
You are not serious people. Exactly.
True. And devastating.
Truer words.
Wait, so the episode ends with Logan saying he's going to delay the vote, right? So they're going to go basically calm Madsen down. Right?
Delaying the vote, though, that's, I don't think Madsen's going to like that. And he didn't even call me, you know?
He called everyone else.
He was buttering him up, right? When he says, like, all the people I respect don't get enough sleep. I was like, he doesn't respect Kendall. Come on. He's just trying to flatter him.
But he's also, like, sitting there in his nightshirt being a little bit, like, up late at night. Because, remember, he's in, like, Italy, right? He's in his, like, villa Como or whatever. He's in Sweden or wherever it is. Like, Gojo is a European company. And it's already, what is it, like, 10 p.m. or something in New York. So he's clearly just being insomniac at this point.
Yeah. Yeah, I was trying to figure out, like, was his call strategic or was it just, like, unhinged a little bit? You know?
It was unhinged strategic.
I think it was too, because, like, isn't part of dealing with Madsen is, like, they're so used to dealing with, like, Wall Street types, and he's a totally different tech type, but also weirdly unreadable in a way of, like, is it strategic? Is it just, like, his odd affect? Is he Elon Musk?
Is he just a Logan, narcissist?
Right, yeah.
Logan is like, openly rude about him at this point, which is interesting because, like, you know, he wants to sell his company. I don't know. Maybe he thinks
that dealing with Madsen is beneath him. He doesn't view him as a peer. And that's,
yeah,
at least not the way that he does the Pierces or, you know, more established.
Now I'm feeling like the deal's not going to go through.
I don't think it will.
I'm sticking with it. What I said.
You think it is going to go through?
So what's the complication for the rest of the season if the deal goes?
We're only two episodes in. That's
there's lots of stuff to do and talk about. There's divorce drama.
Okay, so all right. First of all,
what happens at ATN?
Does the wedding happen tomorrow?
Wow. I think, yeah. Willa, she was in the bed. She's going to go through with it.
But something weird will happen. Like, isn't it supposed to be like a spectacle at the Statue of Liberty or something?
I feel like Willa's not going to put up with that.
She's come this far.
It all feels so real.
But Willa's, I think, you know, Willa's beginning. Like, yeah, she's obviously having her, like, last minute wobbles, which a lot of, you know, brides to be have and grooms to be. Like, that's.
You can't be jumping for joy the whole time. Incredible.
I mean, what's that wonderful line from Connor? Fuck, she's in the East River.
Oh, no, she's on the bridge.
Yeah, that was a great exchange between Connor and Shiv where he's like, it's a factory setting. And she's, it's not. Because he's, you know, doing the Find My on his phone for her. It's not.
But yeah, she, like, you know, she knows what to do. She just goes into the bathroom for 40 minutes, disappears off, has a few drinks in Williamsburg, and comes back and prepares herself for the big day tomorrow.
She also got, I don't know if you guys noticed this, much more blonde and much more, like, her aesthetic is much more political wife now.
Yes.
Like, she's really, they're really leaning into it, you know, like, clothing-wise, appearance-wise.
She looks like she fits in now. That's what I was, that's what I was trying to say before. Like, she's, like, her arc is, like, fully converted to the billionaire side. Like, she can't just walk away from this now.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, like
her little friends on the stairs look so different from her, you know?
Capricious bag.
The big, like, I guess it's a rehearsal dinner is the night before the wedding, right?
Yeah.
It seems to be Willa, her gaggle of female friends who went to the bathroom with her, the three siblings who turn up late because the helicopter was canceled, and Connor, and no one else, just sitting at, like, one table in the middle of the Four Seasons. And like, that's, you know, that's just, like, that shot of Connor sitting at that big circular table with no one else at the table, just feeling completely friendless and alone.
Where was Logan? Did Logan ever show up to that?
Why didn't Logan show up to that?
He just doesn't care, I guess.
Such a bummer.
He wasn't there. He went to ATN instead.
Roman reminds him that the wedding is the next day, and Logan's like, well, whatever.
Looking at Etienne. By the way, what was the thing, I can't remember the line where Tom is like, tell me every, when Logan's like walking around the floor, and Tom is like, tell me everything that he's doing, Greg, with his face. Oh, and he's like, it's like if Jaws, what is it? Like if Jaws.
It's like Jaws, if everyone in Jaws worked for Jaws.
It's so good.
He's just terrifyingly moseying. It looks as if Santa Claus was a hitman.
It's so good.
He's just kind of walking around, but with a slight sense that he might kill someone.
Oh, and Logan, when he's peering over the shoulder of one of the
The poor employees,
he uses I like he basically calls him an apparatchik, but uses a better word for it.
Stakhanovite?
Yes, Stakhanovite.
Yeah, I was going to ask what does that mean?
Oh, Stakhanovite means basically he's being sarcastic, right?
Like so a Soviet like
the Soviet ideal was of this Stakhanovite worker. I think Stakhanov was this famous worker who was like, could do the work of 100 men and that kind of thing. And everyone needs to be a Stakhanovite and work very hard. And he was just like, all you're doing is drafting a single email, and that's all you've been doing the whole time I'm here. You know, he's a fucking Stakhanovite over here.
But it was funny because, like, Logan's so obviously displeased with ATN, or maybe performatively displeased, right? But right. Then he gets up and makes the crazy speech, which is why it's such a good moment, because you're like, he starts off as Jaws and he ends up as, like, I don't know.
It is very weird to me the way in which Logan veers wildly from like almost dead and or like having his sort of King Lear UTI episode to being, you know, to being like, as I say, like Henry V and being like this great leader of men and incredible charismatic, you know, only competent person. And I do feel like that's a hard act for the show to pull off. Like they can't quite work out whether he's mentally all there or not. He clearly was in this episode.
Yeah. It's like a back and forth. And then, he's got to die by the end, right?
I think so.
Yeah.
It's just like,
they got to pay that off.
Someone has to die. Like in every great TV show, someone has to die.
Someone has to die.
It's just like, how are they? It's to me, it's more, how many episodes? Like 12 episodes? It's
10.
Like 10? Okay. Are they going to have like a Sopranos-esque ending? Is it going to be, sounds like he wants to make it more satisfying, like a more.
I hope it's a little bit fan service. I don't want Sopranos ending, but I don't need it to be 6 feet under and literally everyone die.
Yeah,
did I just ruin 6 feet under?
I think it'll be fan service. Like it seems like they have a good, like it's like whenever you're writing a piece and you're like, you write the piece, blah, blah, blah. And then you're like, fuck, how do I end it? And like I think they've thought through the ending. Like I think they probably in the writer's room started being like, okay, how does this end?
Yeah.
Right? Because you kind of have to.
Well, the payoff comment makes it seem like they want a tight resolution that's very clear.
I think so. There's a slight chance I've made that up in my head, the payoff comment. Someone has said it.
No, I think it sounds right.
Yeah.
Like maybe here's the plug. I think he did an interview in The New Yorker with.
Uh-huh.
With us, so but I don't remember what he said about payoff.
So
I'm a bad employee.
So I want to talk a little bit just in terms of like television about the back-to-back multiplayer scenes, like the first one in the bar with the four children, and then the second one in the karaoke spot with the four children plus Logan plus Kerry. Both of which were just incredibly complex in their sort of choreography and their writing, and full of the kind of thing that you can only do when people have been watching, you know, 30 plus hours of this show already and they know these characters and you can convey things with just like, you know, a raised eyebrow. And it for me, like this is where the all of the sort of golden age of television stuff really comes into its own. You can't do that in a movie because you don't have enough time to develop the characters in that kind of way, and you don't have a 10-hour season that you have the luxury of being able to spend probably what was like 15 minutes just on those two scenes, and they're just beautifully written and beautifully like emotionally acted, and well done, you guys.
But it's even like I rewound a couple of times because I watched this like late last night, and I was like, when Shiv when they have a kind of like a, Stewie is like waiting outside in the car and he's sort of like pretending to be like a taxi driver. And then they have the conversation where I think it's the first time that they give you the details of how they think the price is misaligned, like they're paying too much. Yeah. And I was like, wait, did I miss the, like, did I miss like why Shiv wants specifically to do this deal? So I rewound and I was like, no, you're just supposed to know that like she has this emotional reaction. She calls Sandy, female Sandy, and it starts this chain reaction. And then they explain the details to you, mm-hmm. which was so interesting to me because I was like, in some ways, like to what you're saying, Felix, it's like you can only do that if it's like, this is, we had a bunch of deal talk the first episode and the rest of this episode is going to kind of unspool it for you. But it was, not that it was confusing, but I was like, I did feel like, oh, did I miss something? You know, or like how much should I know about why she wants to do this? It felt subtle in a way that is kind of golden age of television.
Yeah, I think it's written with the assumption that the audience is so invested in this show, which they are. You know, it definitely has that kind of following that they'll wait to reveal things that, you know, a lot of viewers would not really sit with on other shows.
Right.
The same thing with in the previous episode, the reason, and I didn't really like cotton to this when I watched it, the reason Logan was so out of sorts, or one reason was because the kids weren't there, and like that was upsetting to him,
right.
and they pay it off in this episode when he literally just says that out loud, and you know it's true, like you saw how he was, and he really did miss his kids, yeah, but they didn't feel the need to make that
the kids definitely were, you know, deeply upset at the end of season three because they had tried to prevent this deal and they thought they could, and then they discovered that they couldn't because Logan had done this deal with their mom. But Logan, like from his point of view, was just like doing a deal with their mom and getting his deal through, and that's what he does, right? He didn't do it to fuck off the kids. He didn't do it to estrange the kids. He wants those kids by him, and when, you know, Roman texts him, he's like, this is great. And then, like, the minute that Roman shows any sign that he might be willing to talk, he's like, come on in, I'm going to put you in charge. You know, I love you guys.
Yeah.
And I think that's probably real.
Yeah. And when
Shiv was like, you know, how dare you do that thing with, you know, conflicting out all the lawyers. I think he's absolutely right. It's like, if you'd asked me, I'd have given you the same advice.
Yeah, which is a little kooky, if you ask me. You have to pick a side. Right? And in the divorce, if you're the father of the person getting divorced.
Disingenuous. It wasn't
to get it. You have to pick a side.
No, but okay, so
but
here's
he was
question.
Trying to punish her for not being there.
Definitely.
You know, he's saying, I'm here, and that's why you didn't get that advice.
And the helicopter move, I mean.
Oh, yeah, the helicopter move was
that was just.
I love the pettiness of some of the slights when there's conflict. The writers do a great job of coming up with the most incredible minor petty way that they wage war against each other.
Completely.
Yeah. Axe that chopper. They can fucking walk.
Well, this is a real life. There's a real life corollary too now, right? Because Sofia Coppola's daughter.
Oh my God!
For trying to book a helicopter
to
see her camp friend in Maryland, and that was kiboshed by her parents. So it's a very similar.
They grounded her. It's basically the same.
It's the same story.
It's basically exactly the same.
Literally grounded her.
What favorite lines, people? Elizabeth, do you have like a favorite line?
Yeah, mine really was the Greg's. It's like Jaws. If everyone in Jaws worked for Jaws. And then he asks, you know, Tom, so he's Logan's just going to be hanging around now. And Tom says, yep, hanging around like the threat of nuclear war.
That was a good line.
Wonderful. I liked this one because I'm going to use it the next time I have to apologize. I'm going to say, look, I don't do apologies, but if it means so much to you, then sorry.
That I heard and was like, that is literally something that they say on Real Housewives. Like, Logan is a housewife.
Incredible apology. Just
incredible.
No notes.
The line that made me laugh the most was the fucking pirates line. But, and I like the Jaws line too. But I did think that the line that they teased in the trailer when Greg and Tom are talking and they're like about Carrie's audition tape and how they're going to tell her, and Tom says it's like Israel and Palestine, but much more delicate and much more important. That's really great.
I don't know. I think my favorite one is that I'm a plant that grows on rocks and feasts on insects that grow inside me. But there was also that throwaway line from Logan at the end, which was so good, where he's like, "This city, the rats are as fat as skunks." It's like
they don't even run anymore.
They don't even run anymore. Yeah, they barely feel the need to run anymore. It's just like that. Oh,
he was so angry because he knew everyone was mad at him. Carrie's mad at him. The kids are mad at him. He's kind of like in a desolate place.
Yeah.
And then he calls Roman.
And Marcia is off shopping in Milan forever.
Definitely. Forever.
He's got to get her back. Wait, what was the line you picked? I had a thought about it. I wanted to bring
Israel Palestine.
Oh, the fact that it was such delicate diplomacy just reminded me of how much it sucks to be a manager or a boss, because I feel like half the work is doing that, breaking news to people in delicate ways that doesn't offend them. That is quite literally the work of most bosses most of the time.
Or an editor when they're
yes.
like, lots of good stuff
lots
here.
Of good stuff.
But
lots of good
I
stuff.
Think you're going to need to rewrite it.
So, okay. I mean,
really good job. Lots of good stuff.
As a, you know, former boss who had to do that kind of thing, Emily.
Yes.
What grade would you give Greg for his diplomacy?
I mean, I actually want to hear what Elizabeth says, so I'll go quick. I would give him like a C minus to a D. It was pretty bad. Totally unclear. Sort of clear. But...
Well, Kerry got the message.
I think for a first timer who was given absolutely no direction from Tom.
He got direction from Tom. Tom told him what to do.
Not really. I mean, he basically, you know, normally if you had a first time manager and they had to fire someone or deliver bad news, you would prep them and tell them exactly what to say. And Tom was just like, "Hey, you can do it."
But but Tom's strategy was good.
Yeah.
I was like, "Oh, you mapped out this conversation." Like,
yeah.
I mean, I think we forget. Tom like worked and slept his way to the top.
Yeah,
right? Like,
yeah.
He's no dummy.
Yeah, he actually has experience.
Yeah, he's a man. I mean,
working.
I was like, oh, he's a manager. He's like,
yeah, no, Tom. Exactly. It's kind of impressive that, you know, it's Tom on one side and Sid on the other, and Logan, and Tom's like, "Can I kiss you?" or whatever. Like, but Tom, you know, even after his marriage has fallen apart, is still actually important at ATN. He still has a real job.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. He managed to do it. He pulled it off.
He doesn't have one of those like fake jobs like Roman had.
The disgusting brothers are running ATN.
I guess maybe even Greg has a real job
yeah.
at this point.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if he, you know, if it doesn't work out, he's the fallback is the Buffalo job. Oh, but not anymore because the deal's going to go through.
Oh, the theme park.
The theme park.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he's
he
big
can
in
just
Buffalo.
Go and run the theme park in Buffalo. Yeah. Definitely. No, you should. Yeah, we need more theme park content. So predictions for next episode. Obviously, it'll be the wedding, right?
I'm feeling like a classic, Succession wedding and a classic Succession board meeting, perhaps.
Ooh, do you think they squeeze both into one episode?
I don't know.
No, I think you're right that the board meeting gets delayed by Logan. Logan is busy meeting with Mattson, so there's a lot of questions about whether he's going to show up to the wedding. Kendall falls off the wagon, maybe. Maybe not. We kind of happened already in season one, so we don't need to have that one again in season
four. Yeah, I don't need to see him going on another bender. No one needs that, right?
This could be Willa's chance to have some histrionics.
Yeah. I think I do agree that the Gojo deal falls apart, but maybe not in, like, I think maybe it's a two-parter, right? Like, this next episode is going to be all about the visit with Mattson. Mm. And Logan's not going to be at the wedding, which is going to be, like, an emotional through line.
If Mattson is in Europe, then just logistically speaking, Logan can't. There won't even be that question of will he or won't he make the wedding, because the minute that we see him in Italy or wherever, like, that's it. He's not at the wedding.
Yeah, which maybe makes Connor do some, like, I don't know, switching sides. I don't know how much, like, could that be a vote for the kids?
Or could like, Connor's mom come out of the woodwork?
Oh, yeah.
That would be amazing.
Yeah.
What a slap in the face. He's not even good to go to Connor's wedding, but he like threw that elaborate English wedding for Shiv, you know? Just...
And Roman won't be at the wedding either, ostensibly, if he's going with Logan.
Poor Connor.
Yeah, Roman wants to get in back in with Logan, but also actually genuinely wants to go to Connor's wedding. He has
yeah.
Poor Roman's conflicted.
Everyone has terrible choices ahead of them. Become a billionaire or just stay really, really rich. Find out next week.
But there's no scenario in which they aren't all really, really rich by the end.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Right?
No, totally. Yeah.
It's like the difference between being a billionaire and a multi-billionaire.
Well, it's the difference between having actual billions or hundreds of millions of money which you can spend versus being a passive shareholder with stock you can't sell in a company that you don't control.
Right.
You know, they can still keep themselves in private jets, but it's not like they can't go out and buy Pierce.
Right. Right.
Yeah, there are limits, I guess. Boundaries that they can't cross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keep us informed with all of your predictions. SlateMoney@slate.com. We want to know what you think is going to happen. Many thanks to Claire Malone for coming on. Thanks, Claire.
Thanks for having me. This
awesome
was a lot of fun.
Having you. And yeah, thanks to Patrick Fort down in DC for producing. Thanks for Ben Richmond for doing all manner of clever button pushing in New York. We will be back on Saturday with a regular Slate Money and back the following Monday with yet more Slate Money Succession.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.